If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever, but, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
You normally say no human is limited, so I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello, welcome back to another episode brought to you guys by sportsshoes.com. As always, little weekend roundup. We are back, bit of road racing coming in, and cross country's just around the corner. So plenty to catch up on, mate.
There is indeed. And I guess, yeah, it's road season. Valencia is around the corner. But we just saw, I think there has been a lot. There's been a lot in the news which has happened recently as well. Brie are actually in profit. That just came out today. So I think they made 100K for the year. So well done to them. I think it definitely helped today. They merged, obviously, what is called Athletics Ventures, or, you know, whatever. Don't know the full ins and outs of that deal, but basically they are now affiliated with London Marathon Events and the Great Run Series, which I think has helped with that massively, because when they're going to sponsors, I think they're now under the same umbrella as London Marathon Events and Great Run. So yeah, I think they're able to get a little bit more out of those sponsorship packages and deals. But yeah, that's a bit of boring news, I guess. But some of the more exciting news, let's get stuck into some of these races then. Obviously, Sessman ran a 2:07, 12, and Great Run, big PB for him as well. But I think, you know, when you look at the way he's been training, I actually think anything less would have been quite a disappointment for him, and because he's churning out some amazing stuff on that canal, two bikes in front of him, and it looks like every session is almost perfection. There is no, you know, he's got great conditions, he's got always, you know, sort of bike support there. And so, and when I caught up with Phil a little while back, you know, he did say the one thing he's changed in all his training was he's dropped all the metrics, all the numbers. The only thing he cares about is the pace he's operating at, and he needs to know exactly what a 3-minute K feels like, and he needs to know his body can do it for the sustained period of time of a marathon. And it's as simple as that. So he has literally gone down the route of just hammering 3-minute Ks, 3-minute Ks, 3-minute Ks, and trying to do as much of that as possible. Obviously, you know, you've got your easy stuff. He decided that little bit of speed work, etc., which he did develop through the summer, back end of the summer there as well, doing the 5K, 10K. And it's paid off. And, you know, huge credit to him. He's obviously going to go again in the Valencia Marathon. His theory behind that is obviously the fact that, you know, he usually does a hard long run in a marathon build anyway. And usually, you know, that really helps him that second time out. He thinks he'll have a little bit more to give. I guess the one challenge he has now is the emotional, he might not have truly appreciated the emotional toll that doing a marathon, succeeding in a marathon, running 2:07, how does that change your emotions? How does that change your motivations? I mean, he's a true professional, right? But yeah, will he have the ability to go and replicate? But he's picked two. I mean, it was great conditions in Amsterdam, showcasing by the fact there was 5 sub-2, which is better than pretty much every major marathon this year. And then obviously, so the course is great, it's flat, and the conditions were great. And then obviously Valencia, you expect the same. So will he have a little bit more to give there? I think he will want to really, he'll probably want to take another 45 seconds off that and try get that inside that sort of 2:06:30 if he's realistic about trying to go to LA.
I guess that's the main thing, isn't it? It's like, it's all very well being like, I'm going to go have another one. But when the first one goes well, how do you reassess that? because it'd almost be easier. Say you ran, I don't know, 2:08:30, something like that. Then you're like, okay, I'll just realign a bit, try and go a little bit better. But actually, like you said, he's basically pumped out a performance that his training suggests. And so now he's got to go and think, at what point do I start trying to run quicker than the pace that I've been trying to make feel really comfortable? Because otherwise you're just going to run the same time again. So what's the point? So it's cool and it's good to get an insight on Phil. And I think the main thing for him though is I think everyone thought he was going to have a real good run in April as well. Because in terms of that, like, it seems like every block Phil does, he kind of churns it out and looks like he's ready to go really well. And I think he'll have been really disappointed, obviously, in April with that 2:14. And to be able to come back and bounce back, it's like, no. I am a proper marathon runner. I'm here to stay, and I'm here to be one of the best consistently in the UK. And that was just a little blip.
I think that was a little blip. I do think that, I mean, him and Hendo, they will know what the training in the process now needs to look like to turn around in 6 weeks, produce a marathon of the same quality, if not better. But yeah, whether they can go and execute that, because I think in training, obviously you don't have the travel, you don't have the emotions, you probably don't have the influx of, he might get a lot of media attention now over the next few weeks. People want to understand, you know, how he raced, everything, the ins and outs. And things can change. And it's why we always get these obscure results after major championships, you know, because elites have boxed off their big goal. And it's amazing kind of how much the mind can take an effect on these performances. So yeah, super intrigued to see what he can do in Valencia. And if he does actually go and level up, I think he is changing the game a little bit. He might be a bit of a trailblazer in that sense of showcasing to people what is actually possible. If he goes and runs another PB in Valencia, that is quite staggering. Like, I don't know anyone who has run two marathons in 6 weeks and PB'd in both. You know, because you're also talking about he could potentially take off a minute and a half, 2 minutes off of his PB before he ran Amsterdam. And so he is looking to do something that no one has ever done before. Well, to my knowledge.
That we know of on kind of that scale as well.
On that scale. You know, so, and it's good for British marathon running, because I do think we are behind, you know, we always say it, we are well behind the Europeans at the moment when it comes to marathon running in our depth. And, you know, let's be honest, that world standard is 2:06:30 still. And it was probably going to be, and by the time LA rolls around, it may even be quicker than that. So, yeah, we still won, but it's encouraging because we have a few people debuting in Valencia, and we have a few people going again in Seville and stuff like that. So we hope that this year we can really get, and with the Europeans on home soil, I don't know how many of the men and women will want to participate in the European marathons, but obviously
standard for the Europeans, you know.
Oh, it's slow, 2:09:30. Yeah, very, very achievable for a lot of people. But we just want to have a lot, you know, it needs to be a lot more competitive in that sort of 2:08:29 region there.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know why you wouldn't do the Europeans personally at this stage, because LA is so far away now.
Yeah, you need it. You need it, because the one thing I would say about all of our athletes in the 5K, in the 10K, in the half marathon, they are inconsistent. We have athletes who can put out a really good performance in perfect conditions, but when it actually comes to facing a little bit of adversity in races, facing oppositions, going in head to head, we are quite inconsistent. And that's why we haven't quite managed to sort of develop those. On the women, we're a lot better than on the men's side, but over the 5 and the 10 and the half and the marathon, etc., you know, bar a mil, we haven't been able to sort of perform to the level that athletes have proven throughout the season and in these sort of perfect scenario style races. And to be honest, when you look at what it's taken for Phil to run 2:07, and you've seen he's done some great insights on YouTube of his training, you do look at that training and like, well, there's not much there where he is having to face adversity. You know, he's not out there sort of running a hard long run over a hilly terrain like the Africans would do. He's on the track. He's got bike paces. He's got training partners. It is so dialed in. And it's phenomenal.
And that, like you say, that's fine for a dialed in race. Like, you go to Amsterdam, you go to Valencia, you know the weather's going to be great. The course is pan flat. You're just trying to lock in on a time. But if you go and try a medal at Europeans or a Worlds or, hey, even Olympics, right? That can't be the approach. You need something else. So, yeah.
Exactly. So that was Amsterdam. And then it was a great day for Andy Henderson because obviously Alex Bell wins the half. Josh Leigh helps pace her. She runs, just misses breaking that 70-minute barrier, 70.05 or 70.04 was it officially. Yeah, fantastic run and a dub for her. So a big day for her and Mizuno. Obviously, it was their event. So very impressive for that, for the Leeds Talent Hub, for Andy Henderson. Smashed it. And it shows, you know, her transition now. And actually, I think she has, maybe over the marathon, time will tell, but strong potential over the half because she's obviously with that track pedigree. She's able to run. She's got a lot more in her over 5K. She's got a lot more in her over 10K probably, which means, you know, she continues to just work on that endurance over the next 2, 3, 4 years, that half will come down quite considerably, and she could be a leading half marathon runner in the UK over the next couple of years.
I think so. And obviously there's so many more opportunities now with kind of road running, and you can really make halves your event as well. It's not like she has to go all the way to the marathon to kind of make a career, if you like, off it. She can just go and race some halves. Not I'm saying that she can't run a marathon, but yeah, she absolutely can just keep nailing halves. And when Alex Bell first kind of suggested she was gonna move to the roads, I didn't think it would be to this level over those longer distances. I thought she might run some quick fives and tens on the road, but yeah, probably didn't expect her to go this well over the half so early as well.
Yeah, so quick in her transition. No, I agree with that. But I think the cool thing about someone like Bell being a little bit more of a power-based athlete, she has that top-end speed. I think she is going to cope. She actually has potential in races over these distances because I think she is... Those who come from the track and cross-country, when it gets to roads, I think have a lot more potential in head-to-head duels. Because they can handle surges, they can handle that adversity that I'm talking about, they can handle scenarios where things are going their way, they can drop the hammer from a long way out, they can go off fast and probably recover because they are used to being in that sort of deficit and in that state of fatigue like they would be on the track. And for example, like I looked at, when I was watching Chicago, I was like, you know, obviously John Carreer comes through, you know, born and bred road runner. But then you look at the likes of Kip Lima and Conor Mance and the success these guys are having, and even Cheptegei to an extent. You look at the success that Kipchoge had, Bekele. And for me, you know, you obviously do get these people who just go straight to the roads. But for me, the big successes when it comes to the marathon, Emil Kares, prime example, fantastic, could probably dominate way more of a cross country than he's even tapped into, and the track. But, you know, you look at these athletes and they have always been very, very accomplished when it comes to, it's either cross country or track. And those are the ones who can go on and win these things, in my opinion, because they have that mental ability. They have that tactical awareness and they have the physiology to handle a lot of different scenarios within the race.
Yeah. And are we going to see Alex Bell on the cross country?
I don't think so.
No, not going to be tempted.
I mean, if I was her, I'd be very tempted because very few women.
When she was an 800 runner.
Look, when you look right now, I mean, how many women can run 70 minutes for a half marathon? I think she was 10th or 8th or 9th fastest this year, right? But then you take out Kelly Thackeray won't do cross country. McColgan won't do cross country. Jess Judd probably won't do cross country. Sam Harrison. Donnelly will do cross country. But, you know, you look at the success someone like Donnelly has, 69-minute half marathon over the country. I mean, she's phenomenal, and you know, she's someone who's always getting right up there, top 10 Eurocross, everything like that. If she did do cross country, I fear she would probably slot straight into that senior women's team given the strength.
Wait, I thought I was going crazy, but I've gone and looked, and because I just remember her doing it pretty much every year, and she used to
she used to finish 20th maybe.
That's what I mean, 21st place when she's running 800s in 2018. I'm like, surely now, like you say, you're slotting right in and you're well up there in that race.
Yeah. Whether the desire's there, you know, I think, you know, one of the things when I spoke to her, she really enjoying about the roads is obviously just setting up your own calendar. You're not dealing with teams, all of that sort of politics. There is a lot less politics on the country, but still some. Hey, so I guess there are major headlines from Amsterdam. Men's and women's overall winners were extremely good. What, 218 and 203 there. Yeah, very good. It's clearly showing that it's a very fast course. If the conditions are good, you can go run faster. Cheptegei coming fifth at 2:04:50 as well. He's having a much slower transition to the marathon than in his countryman Kiplimo, but I think he is certainly one to watch as the years develop, because I think something just tells me he's being a little bit more sustainable with his approach. Maybe he's thinking bigger picture. I've always thought Cheptegei, a little sort of Kiplimo, always has been this guy just like pedal to metal. You know what I mean? Where Cheptegei has always been a little bit more methodical in his career and adopted like a little bit more of a longer term strategy, etc. So when he gets it right, Cheptegei, I think he will be able to win a marathon major. And by the time the Olympics rolls around, maybe something special there as well. So, but
just he's way fast, doesn't he?
He virtually had them. I mean, there were big groups in Amsterdam, you know, 20. Phil was in the second group and there was still a lot of them. Although he did obviously work his way through in true sort of just big city marathon fashion, there were a lot of DNFs and a lot of people fading drastically. I mean, on that, I couldn't believe in Chicago how many people just decide they're going to rip off, you know. By the way, Paddy Diva is doing New York, what, we 2 weeks out from New York Marathon. He ran and paced. That was the most impressive thing to come out of Chicago for me. The fact Paddy Diva pacemaked 60 flat through halfway, virtually ran a half marathon PB off the front in Chicago. Off a 13:40 first 5K or something stupid. He's looking good for New York.
Yeah, I just hope that wasn't his race.
Well, I know he's done quite. He obviously
that's the
did,
issue, isn't it? It's like it's
not
racing. You just can't. You can't let up as well. There's no, because if you're running, if you're actually racing a half and thinking this is a prep race, you can just pull yourself back if need be. Pacing, you got no choice, and if you have to take him through, you have to take him through. So.
Yeah, mate, let's move over to Great Southend, because talking of guys who are sort of making a comeback, and Mark's going to be in Valencia Marathon. Good, nice win for him over the 10 miles, putting Jake Smith away. I think that'll give him a bit of confidence boost, just given that Jake Smith has run some very credible half marathons recently as well.
Mate, absolutely. Like, look, Jake Smith is pretty much back to his best, right? Like, he's no slouch at all, and yeah, I think it's a decent win for Mark. And again though, it's just like, you, I don't know how much to read into these races at this time, because I think we know Mark Scott can run a good 10 mile, we know Mark Scott can run a good half. How many more swings does he have at the marathon? I think we had this discussion a couple months ago maybe, and it's almost make or break on Valencia, and so he'll be confident, but I don't think it's going to give him anything crazy. I think he just needs to knuckle down, make sure he's done enough miles, make sure he's done enough longer efforts in training, because it just seems to be that 26.2 has just been a bit too far the past couple of times.
Yeah, I think he's just had those niggles going into these marathons, which if he's over those and he just gets it right on the fueling, I think, yeah. And I think Mark is actually in a position where this time around he can be a little bit cautious going into Valencia. I think he can box off, you know, I think he can set off and shoot for that 208 and just try and box it off. And I think he should, if he's fit, he should be very, very comfortable.
I'm not saying he did that on the first one.
Through
when he did that London, that's what he tried to do. I seem to recall.
Yeah.
He didn't go off crazy. And I think then, yeah, it was the second one. I think he thought, well, that didn't go quite as well as I hoped. So I need to prove something now. And like you say, I think just getting one, picking one off, it's done. I've run sub 2:10 comfortably. Feel all right. I can go again, is all he needs to do. Yeah, it will be if he tries to think, okay, well, Phil's just dropped this 2:07. I need to beat Phil. I need to run 2:06 flat and prove to everyone.
Yeah, I think he just needs to work what sort of training works for him going into these marathons. And you know, if he can run 2:08, then at least he can look back and go, well, look, you know, I had 12 weeks, 16 weeks where I did X, Y, and Z, and it got me in and around about 2:08 shape. Brilliant. What do I need to now change to go run 2:06? And I think that's how, you know, he will probably be approaching Valencia, as opposed to going fucking gung-ho trying to run 2:06. Because even 46, it was horrible conditions actually, but even his 10 mile is quite a long way sort of shy of someone who can go and run 2:06. So
4:45 marathon.
It is
2:06.
Yeah. So, no, 2:04, 2:05.
Yeah.
4:53 is 2:08 flat. Anyway, Verzi Ockenden to the women's race. which was quite tactical to women's race. So it was good to see her just enjoy, get a good battle out there. Beth Kidger, Katie C. Morris in behind her, rounding up the podium on that one from Great South. But it was a beautiful weekend.
Those on the cross as well, we might see.
Potentially, I do just think, you know, Ockenden is as well someone who I think she'll be looking to really to see what she can do over that sort of half marathon distance. Can she start to push out a time that she, well, long story, that she's capable of, to be honest with you. You know, I think she, this is an athlete, you know, this is a European medalist. This is someone who's had a good track pedigree over the longer distance as well. And you would like to think that we're going to see a big half marathon from her in the next few weeks, you know, a sub 70 in the next few weeks, sorry, the next few months.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of seeing big half marathons, obviously Valencia is back this weekend and plenty of Brits to look out for. Rory Leonard's, Scott Beattie, Alex Shee's going in there. Charlie Wheeler's going as well over on the men's side. So look, how many of them are going to run a marathon before relay? And how quick are they going to run in the half, you know?
Yeah. What do we reckon? I mean, Diva's clearly head and shoulders. I mean, Roe as well, running 60 mid this year. Is anyone running sub 61? Is anyone running sub 62 out of them lot?
I mean, Charlie's trying to go sub 62 is what I've heard. I think he'd be there or thereabouts. Obviously, he kind of thing with him. Like, obviously, he beat the old British record for the 10K on the row when Leonard obviously ran the new record, and kind of went under the radar a bit with that time in terms of kind of road racing performance. Mm-hmm. But look, it shows his ability and potential on the road, I think.
Well, and the Wheelers, we have heard, they have a new coach. They have moved to Darren McElhenney's coach.
They have. So they're not moved over to Dublin, though. Not yet.
They're going to be based where they are in sort of Milton Keynes way, right? And they're just going to be coached remotely and go on camps. Is that what's going to happen?
On camps, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And go with them. So look, I think they've been crying out for it, basically.
Been crying out for a coach.
For a couple of years now, just like drifting around. And I think it'll be interesting to see how they kick on, because obviously cemented themselves as serious contenders on the domestic stage. But can they step up and make a jump now?
Well, also, what event do they want to do? Are they committed to the 5K? You know, because there is a bit of an opening there with the 5K. You know, you know that if you can run, what did Dara run this year? 13:01, 13:02. If they can go run that, the chances are, you know, they're going to be looking for that selection for the Europeans. And then obviously Worlds and Olympics. So there's going to be three spots there for the Europeans. And I think, you know, they really need to get on a GB team. And Charlie does anyway.
They're doing Liverpool.
And Liverpool Cross as well. Good news.
We start talking about track next summer. I'm enjoying no track and getting into cross.
Talking about that, then I'll just run you through. I can't find an extended start list for Valencia, which is frustrating because that's where we see a lot of the British women on, as well as we see a lot of the other British men. We just know because of our network and word of mouth about, you know, the likes of, obviously it's well documented that the team of Cowboys are doing it, but yeah, on the British side, and then obviously various other Europeans who are going to be on the cusp of sort of national records, stuff like that. But, on the women's, Nagetic is obviously doing it after a fine world champs and 63.04, her lifetime best. She lead to the women's entries. I mean, there's a couple of them, sub 64, Tessa Faye as well. 10 Tessa Faye, Chep Karui, Chelangat, bunch of Kenyans and Ethiopians, Emma Hurley of US, 67.35, Vera Lahti of Sweden, 68.19. So there is a whole host. There will be a whole host of women breaking 70 there for sure. On the men's side, Kijelcha, he is like the official world record holder at the moment. Kiplimo's hasn't been ratified yet, I don't think. Kijelcha's has 57.30. He leads. But for me, it is obviously loads of other Kenyans as well in there and Ethiopians. But Armgren is an interesting one, 59.23. I think the European record could go. He's going to break that European record. I think Armgren will be attacking a sub. So we'll see if he does that for European record. What, 59.13? It's still bloody wonders at this stage. So getting it wild.
It depends how much how well they can bounce back, I think. Like, the champs is just not that long ago.
But the way they train and stuff. And I think the advantage Armgren has for me is that he has already run a 59.23. So, some of that. So he's already running. He's already done a half marathon and succeeded. Whereas Ingebrigtsen, when he obviously did Copenhagen, I think there was, well, one, he went off really hard. But two, I don't think, you know, I think he thought he would go better over the half. And obviously just being, you know, that much quicker over the 1500, he was coming at it from a 1500 background, whereas Almgren is obviously 5 and 10 and he's had great success over both this year. So he's already probably training. And when, you know, when we spoke to him, his training's very, very similar to a half marathon runner anyway. And, you know, that 4 or 5 weeks post world, I think he would have just transitioned into slightly specific half marathon work. And he's going after that European record, make no mistake about it.
Yeah. Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. So yeah, all that to look forward to, mate. One thing we should talk about, we've got to talk about, I guess the women's 800 meter news, Femke Bol stepping up. Yeah. Keely got asked a few questions about it recently as well. And was kind of, I don't know. It's interesting listening to or kind of watching the reaction and trying to kind of interpret how she actually feels about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it obviously it's relatively, I guess it's a couple of weeks old, this news now, but we haven't discussed it, have we? In my opinion, I just think, what does it say? Well, something I was thinking of is like, what does it say about the event when Femke Bol and Sydney McLaughlin both choose to stop doing this event? That is a real shame for 400 meter hurdling. That is a real shame.
It is, because you think...
Superstars.
Yeah. And why can't we just have 10 years of them just going head-to-head?
This is what I think. You know, and clearly, for them, the 400-meter hurdles is not very fulfilling for them anymore. And I think the problem is because they're so far ahead of everyone else. You know, they just piss it up. And, you know, people call it a rivalry. It's not a rivalry. McLaughlin, Leverone has beat Femke Bol every opportunity that they've ever stepped onto the track. So it's not really a rivalry. And I think Bol probably, if I was Bol, I would find it a bit frustrating the fact that McLaughlin chose quite early on in her career, you know, after she ran a few world records, okay, yeah, I'm going to move over to the 400. I'm going to muck around with different events. I think that would have, if it was me, that would have frustrated me that, the best in the world is moving away from your event. And then obviously Bol, you know, obviously she is an incredible athlete and she too has dominated the 400 hurdles when Sydney McLaughlin and Leverone is not there. So I thought that's interesting, the fact that she felt the need to step away and that fact that she chose the 800 instead of the, you know, the flat 400, which she too is very bloody good at.
Yeah, it's interesting. And obviously we'll see when she does make a switch, but it's interesting that that she feels that she can make that switch. Because I think switching from a 4 hurdles to a 400 flat, you're like, well, you've obviously run, you do a lot of 400 meter flat training. And so you kind of know. Because you're not going to make that switch if you're like, oh, well, my goal is to make the final.
Yeah.
You're making that switch. When you're that good, you're making that switch because you think you can medal and you can think you can potentially win.
Like Sydney did.
Yeah. And so it's interesting how in what like... like in how she regards the women's 800 and the state of the world, if she thinks that she can just do that.
Mate, honestly, I think she looks at it. I think she's probably like, it's as fast as they're running. It's probably not as strong. There's opportunity. She must see opportunity there, which is your...
That's what I mean. Yeah. And it's interesting that she views it. And I think
she'll be looking at it going, well, what's Keely run for 400? 52? Well, I've got three. Is it 52? I don't think she's broke 52. Actually, maybe she's run 51, but she'll be looking at this going, well, the best in the world, the athlete who is challenging for world records, she's won the Olympics, is only a 52 400 meter runner, or 51 maybe. I think Bol has 2 seconds on her. You know, Bol is 2 and a bit seconds on her. Bol's run 49. And so... And I guess she's going, well, I do the 4 hurdles. I've got great strength. Maybe I can, you know, maybe I can challenge over the 800 here. Like I should be feeling, even if I go through in 55, that's quick for most of these women. I should be feeling bloody good at 55. I think the problem is though, it takes, I would love to see the training that she would do for the 800. Because that aerobic side of things, if she prioritizes that, it will really take away from that top end that she has.
Yeah. Does she just double down and go, look, I'm the quickest, or does she really try and go, I need to start doing long runs or whatever?
What does she do? And finding that ratio of intensity versus building that aerobic system is surely going to be very, very difficult. Also, something else, which is why Keely is not as fast over 400, is the mechanics. The mechanics for the 800 versus the 400 and 4 hurdles is very different. And I'm not sure Bol will be able to get anywhere near the same mechanics she does in the 400 when she's in her own lane and she can really put power through each stride. She's high stepping. She has a long rangey stride.
Good 4x4 runner though, to be fair to her.
It's not the same as an 800, mate. And I think she will not be able to adopt those same mechanics, which means that she then is nerfed a little bit when it comes to the 800. Mate, interesting take, I guess. Like, is that like a beauty term, isn't it?
He's getting buffed next.
Learn the dictionary term.
Oh, dear.
You remember M4A?
Yeah, our younger listeners will know about that.
The gun's been nerfed. It's not hitting the same. Anyways.
Dearie me.
I think the one thing I took from it was I was like, that's a shame for the 400 hurdles.
Yeah.
That was an event which people used to really look forward towards. And I think now those people who are going to go and win Europeans or win Worlds or whatever it is, it's just going to be like, oh, well, Sydney and Femke, weren't they? There will be that period, you know, until they are far removed. But also I thought, this is Bol being quite serious about this, being like, I want to do this for the next few years. And I was like, poof. And I thought she might just try it for 1 year and see how it goes. And she still might do that. But
we shall see, mate. We'll see how it unfolds. It's better for us. As distance fans, it's better for us having another big name. But also, I'm sure, a good athlete as well.
Yeah. I think it's a classic case, mate, of underestimating other events. We see it all the time.
That's what
I mean. 1,500 boys go, I could do the 5K piece of piss. I'd do a bit of double threshold. Do you know what I mean? Can't get near it. And it's the same, you know, people... You know, they try and move to the steeple and they don't do it much success. One, even 10 might have great success. I think it's just a classic case of that. So I'm super intrigued. Paulino is also mentioning about she might try the 800s. Women's 800 could be nuts. I mean,
yeah.
I told you, even the sprinters are now starting to admit that distance events are more exciting. They even want to start doing them. So anyway, mate, the only last thing that I wanted to talk about is quickly just the NCAAs and the depth out there. But it's the way the Kenyans are dominating. I don't know if you've watched classic Nutty Cone Wisco, the Wisco Disco and pre-nats. But mate, long story short, Kenyans are absolutely thrashing around. They're murdering these races. Someone like Temer has gone out there to UNC and he comes 25th in the Wisco Disco, given it is pretty much his first NCAA sort of cross-level race. But this is a guy who won Liverpool Cross last year.
And we always talk it up. We always talk that up and say, how would it?
I know. And I was like, fuck, you know. But the thing is, when you take out the Kenyans, he probably was inside the top 10 at the Whisker Disco. Like, it is the NCAA now, for me, I do not think it's the best place to develop anymore as an athlete. And I think because of that ruthlessness in training.
It's just a pro league. It's like a lot of American things, and it's just become a professional sports league, and because of that, people are beg, borrowing, stealing, and just getting in whoever they can.
Yeah, and you're getting a lot of different athletes every year now, so you're not going up against the same. And I don't think programs are not. I mean, if you're 18, I'm not. If you're British 18-year-old, I think you've got no chance in the NCAA right now. I mean, James Dargan is like he was a phenomenal athlete, and he's obviously at Stanford, and it's just so tough because. As a distance runner, you need momentum, you need that confidence to develop, to grow, and you need to be nurtured. But the problem is, how can you be nurtured when the level is 22, 23 minutes for 8K on a hilly? You know, people say these American courses are golf courses. They are, but they're hilly. And it's still running 23 minutes. It's a 430 mile.
And it's still grass. It's not.
Yeah, it's grass. And a 430
mile. It's not road. Like, it's, yeah.
Ridiculous. You know, and... There's so much demanded of you. Yeah, you know, teams are not taking 18-year-olds now and turning them into... And even if you're an 18-year-old and by the time you're 21, 22, you're running 13-30, it's phenomenal. But you're not getting that NCAA experience. You're not going to the NCAA championships like you used to. You're getting nowhere near making the top seven in your cross team. You've got no chance. You're going
that's
to
it. You just end up redshirting for 3 years.
Low key.
If you can get out there in the first place.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is survival of the fittest now more than ever. And if you do survive it, you will be a bloody beast. But I do fear that, yeah, when you look at you know, I do, yeah, Temer, this guy probably could have made GB teams for the next 3 or 4 years on the cross and stuff like that.
What's the moral of the story? Go to Oxford, be coached by you. Can you do grade reductions, mate, for Oxford students?
I don't know why I talk so much, because I definitely don't have all the answers. But, you know, I just thought it is worth noting how brutal the NCAA is now, and it's something that we've said for a while. And yeah, I mean, the guys up at the front are sub 13-minute 5K runners. They always used to be good, talented runners, but you know, they weren't fucking fully fledged professionals, and now that's what it is. And unfortunately, that's now how coaches are working with people. You know, you're expected to be of that level. You're expected to be able to train. Like if you're an 18-year-old, you go into a team, you've got a guy running 30. If you join New Mexico, you've got a guy running 12:55 for 5K. They're like, his training and his needs are completely different to that of an 18-year-old who's run 14 minutes or 14:10. And as a coach, it must be so difficult to balance the two as a program.
And they talk about packing in cross country. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm just gonna go run with a pack then. It's like, how do you do that?
Yeah. So
it's just, yeah.
I'm excited to see how things develop for internationals in the NCAA over the next couple of years.
Hey, maybe it would make Bucks even better. It's been getting there. I guess there was a point where I think everyone or 90% of people who were your top teenagers were at least considering the US. But I think Bucks is, and the UK is definitely kind of becoming more and more attractive. And if it does, actually, if we can keep people here and like you say, get them on under 20, under 23, European outdoor, whatever it is, teams, indoor senior teams, then maybe that's the best thing for their development anyway. Look at someone like Jake Wyman, UK university system, but then obviously you got your Kerrs who went to the US, so not one way to do it.
But even when Kerr went to the US, he was able to go there as what he run like
he three young, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, he obviously went out at 18. He was able to go there as a 3:43, 3:44 runner, or 3:41 maybe he'd run. But I know times are different. And he was able just to steadily progress, and he was coached in that way as well. Whereas what I'm saying now is you're an 18-year-old, you've run 3:41, which is a fucking incredible time. But hold on, there's four guys on the team who are running 3:37. They're getting all the attention, all the focus.
And you'll never get to race. That's like not properly, like not in the championship. You might go and be able to do the time trials, but you'll never actually. And that's always been the biggest draw for me, I think, in terms of like when you see an athlete go there, they come back and they know how to navigate rounds, navigate championships.
They can't do that anymore.
They've done on their conference, and they might have gone NCAAs and their region every year for 4 years. And they've really grown in that sense, which I think is what we lack here. In the UK, and when people are just kind of going after BMCs or whatever it is, but yeah, now you go over there and you just end up time trialing to try and make your team anyway, and then you don't even get to race.
Yeah, very very competitive, and I think yeah, those who survive will be extremely robust and ruthless. But I think unfortunately, you know, you look at the system now; it's a tough place to develop in.
Yes. Anyway, I think that wraps up our episode. And we'll be back very soon with another guest episode as well. Make sure you go check out latest guest episodes if you haven't already. Judah Patinane on Sunday. We had a great episode there. Obviously, cool story. Her growing up in the UK, now competing for Uruguay, and obviously getting that shock bronze medal over in the World Champs Marathon. But thanks for listening to us. We'll catch you very soon.